Reading FC bowed out of the FA Cup with a 1-0 defeat to Luton. That featured a raft of young royals getting their chance in the first team and coming within inches of forcing extra time in a tournament that we perhaps are happy to let slip by this campaign. Welcome to the Tarnhurst End Podcast, episode 247, the podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans, with your host Mark Mayo this week. And joining me is Alan West. Westy, how is it going, mate?
Very well, thank you, Mark. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks. Not too bad. Just enjoying a rare Monday off on a pretty pointless having Mondays off these days. You can't go anywhere.
No, you can't do a lot any day, so it doesn't matter what day you have off, really, does it?
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Well, perfect chance to talk Reading then and get our teeth into the FA Cup third round. Before we do that, a big thanks, as always, to our Patreon subscribers giving us a little virtual tip over the internet, which always goes a long way, as does the sponsorship that we have from ZCZ Films. A big thank you to them. So, without further ado, let's get on and talk about Luton 1, Reading 0.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with The Recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So let's talk about the starting 11 that Veljko Paunović picked for this game then. Bristow, Dorset, Onan and Pendlebury all in from the start. We also saw Dejan Teke, Mamadi Camara, Nahu Melvin-Lambert and Connor Lawless coming off the bench. We actually, Westy, by the end of this game, the oldest player on the pitch for Reading was 23 years old, which I'm reliably informed is quite young. So was this the kind of right idea to take for this game, or I suppose, you know, was it maybe not the best chance to play him?
Well, again, we've had quite a few injuries, haven't we, over the last two months, really, where we've lost some big players. So I can see why he decided to go for what I'd call an experimental side. I think a lot of fans that I speak to in there would like to have a decent FA Cup run. But I think in this case, I think it was nice to see some of the younger players. I think we can see that Reading as a club have got a bright future. Now, whether that be with these players in the side or not, you can't tell this young, but they showed a lot of nice touches. I thought second half, well, they're by far the better side. And the future's bright, I think. If this is what we've got underneath the first team squad, it's certainly heading in the right direction.
Yeah, it felt like, I mean, last summer we got rid of a lot of under-23 players. And I suppose what that was a sign of was the club putting its eggs in a few, like only a few baskets, really, rather than kind of spreading your bets on which under 23 players are going to make it through. They kind of only kept the ones that they really believed had a chance of making it in the first team. And I think you can see why, certainly. Van Tetek's been on the ball, I've been impressed by him. Melvin Lambert came so close to getting an equaliser. And I think that it was, you know, I think it was certainly a good chance to see the young players play. Bristow at left back as well, you know, for, you know, the sort of talk that's going on with Omar Richards at the moment, he might be quite a key player moving forward. But let's cover the goal first. Was it perhaps a case of the keeper being able to do better, poor marking, or, you know, just a good shot for him? I think it's Moncur in the first half.
Yeah, I think we was a bit overloaded, weren't we, on that right-hand side. I think a lot of people tried to blame Estevez for what I see on Twitter this week. I thought it was a little bit harsh because he was marking two players. I would say about Estevez on the day, I thought he was the best player on the pitch. And what it does show you is Estevez isn't a guaranteed starter at this club. But on a day when we've played a lot of young players that are around about the same age as him, he stood out as the best player for me. So that just goes to show the players that are sort of on the fringes or pushing their way onto the subs bench, that is the level you've got to get to get anywhere near that first team squad. And I think, like you said earlier, they maybe have put their eggs in a few baskets, but we will still be lucky to see one of those players make it as first team regulars in the next 2 or 3 years. It's very difficult to come out of under 23s and go into a championship side at Reading's level. You'll probably see a few of them get shipped out now, maybe even January, so they can play some proper professional games, maybe in the league below, League One or League Two. If they can push through after that, then great to them. But I think that is a benchmark for them on Saturday to see the level that Estevez is at. I know McIntyre's a little bit older, but you know, that's what you have to be to get anywhere near that first team squad from two players that are not guaranteed first team starters.
Yeah, no, it's a good point to make. And Estevez, certainly in that second half, is the ability that he had to kind of maraud forward and beat a couple of players, play a pass or even have a shot, it shows the level of class that a player who comes from Porto has, as opposed to a player that has come from Reading. I suppose you can put it that way. And Reading, the second half was obviously so much of a better performance from Reading. In the first half, only had 4 shots, probably the best chance falling to Sonny Aluko, shot wide. 14 shots in the second half. Aluko hit the bar. Baldock having a good shot saved. Melvin Lambert, as I mentioned earlier, hit the bar. Jaden Onan had a couple of rebounds that he couldn't really get much onto. So I think in terms of a performance, Reading, I don't think there's anything we can really criticise. Maybe in the first half a bit reserved, but in that second half, you'd think that you could play that game again and probably win it in 90 minutes, let alone get an equaliser.
Well, I think the disappointing thing was some of the older professionals that Aluko, I'm going to pick out. I mean, I know a lot of people have a go at Aluko. I don't in general. I think he's all right. I think he's a decent Championship footballer. But over the last, well, even since he's been here, really, his finishing is absolutely abysmal. How can you be missing a target from 6 yards out when basically all you do is side foot it and it'd have been a goal? To blaze it over the bar from there is inexcusable. I think the last couple of weeks we've seen him get himself into really good positions on his right foot, and every time he drags that ball, now really a man in his 30s, and commanding the sort of money that he has by the club and other clubs, you should be able to be much better of a finisher than he is. So if there's any criticism, I think I'll have to criticise the more senior professionals that I think maybe let themselves down a little bit on Saturday. But as an overall performance, I've got to say, I really genuinely enjoyed it. It was good. I thought it's, like I said, a good benchmark for the youngsters. It's a shame they're not going to get another game to play, though, because they could do with the experience. But like you said, they were good. I thought Southwood and Gar, I thought he was decent. I thought he was brave. And I wouldn't be too upset if we had to put him in for 3 or 4 games during the season due to injuries, because he looked like he was at that level. And that's testament to him. It's a shame at the end. I mean, Melvin Lambert, he looked lively when he come on. He looked more of a threatening bulldog did over the 70 minutes he was on the pitch. But he should have finished, really. He had the best opportunity, I thought. And when it come back, for the rebound, I thought there was players in front of him. He did slash it a bit, but yeah, overall great performance, and I really genuinely enjoyed it.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd say on Aluko is that the performance that's most impressed me all this season is, I think, is it Watford, when he played basically centre mid, and you almost wonder that, given, not like we need loads of centre mids at the moment because Rinomoto and Lauren have got it nailed down, but with the experience that he has, and with the, you know, we have some really decent attacking players in front of Aluko at the moment, is that almost the better position to play him in? Because you don't rely on him to be too creative, which, you know, he's a good dribbler with the ball, but he doesn't pick out loads of passes. But he can use his experience more that in those sort of places. And I don't know, I think that probably suits him better at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I've got no gripes with Aluko. I think he's all right. I know a lot of people slate him off, but I don't think he's a bad footballer. It's just when he gets himself in good positions, he makes bad decisions. And that's why he never progressed past the level, or he hasn't progressed too much past the level that he's got to, because it's that makes you a top player, and that's what he hasn't got in his locker.
Yeah, the only other thing I really suppose we can talk about this game is perhaps whether it matters or not. I mean, it's the FA Cup third round. It's certainly one of my favourite weekends of the season. Obviously, there was a lot of great games, a lot of great upsets going on over the weekend. Reading basically probably the last the least interesting game, I suppose you could say, from a neutral point of view, which was a bit of a shame, but that's the draw that you get. But the fact that there's no fans to go and enjoy a sort of away trip to the likes of Crawley or whatever we've had in recent years, there is obviously a promotion bid that Reading have at the moment. Does this kind of make it the least important cup run, I suppose, since 2012 when we won the league? We got knocked out at home to Stevenage in the third round. Probably since then, we haven't had one that perhaps, or hopefully, matters as little as this one.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you look back in the history of FA Cup, we've never won it, have we? So whatever side we'd put out, does it make a great deal of difference? Probably not. But on the grand scheme of things, I think we're well aware that we're well in the playoff race at the moment, if not pushing for promotion. And I think everyone at the club at the end of the season, if we end up going back into the Premier League, no one's going to care that we got knocked out by Luton. Simple as that, really.
No, absolutely. And there's a bit of trivia for you here that Reading have won just one of their last 9 FA Cup away games. That's if you count last year's penalty wins against Cardiff as a draw. And here's a quiz question for you, Westy. I have no idea if you've seen this stat this week, but this is the first time since 1989-90 that the same team has knocked Reading out of both cup competitions. Who was that team in 1989-90?
I haven't seen it. I'm going to go for someone really random. Was it Plymouth?
It was Newcastle.
Oh, Newcastle. I was at that game, actually. We got beat 4-0 at home. I always remember it because the Geordies all sat on the walls and the ground so they couldn't get in. Back in the days when you could sit on the wall. Like, I see, actually, funny I mentioned that. It's nice to see that Marine game when I was all sat round the side of the pitch watching the match.
Oh, yeah, that was class.
That is the third round of the FA Cup to me, when you've got grounds like that where you can sit in your bedroom window and watch the match. That's how it should be.
Yeah, there was a brilliant picture of Jose Mourinho kind of on just a plastic chair of his dugout with a bloke sat on his shed above Mourinho, basically.
That's how it should be. That is the love of the FA Cup for Ireland. That's what you don't get in other countries. That sort of really local side, sort of the postman and the milkman having a go at some of the bigger scalps. And that's why you love the FA Cup third round, because it brings that up every once in a while. And even for a team like Crawley to turn leads up, I think everyone enjoyed that. And when you've got celebrities on the bench you're bringing on at the end, I think you're really taking the mic.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's probably the one thing I'd say about being a Reading fan, certainly since I've been watching us, is that we've probably not had that sort of games. I remember us going to Torquay in the League Cup in like 2010, maybe 2009. We've had Crawley away as well. We haven't had, like, certainly while I've been watching it, like a proper non-league away day.
Do you know what? I can remember when I was a lot younger. I can't remember what year it was now. I think it was the back end of the 80s. Might have been 89 when we played Slough in the FA Cup. Must have been one of the earlier rounds, I think. Slough away, and we 3-1 up with... well, in injury time, pretty much, in the 89th minute, and that game ended up being 3-0, and that was a bit of a kick in the teeth. But it does stick in my mind as one of those FA Cup sort of classic games when it sort of turned on a sixpence out of absolutely nowhere.
Well, we'll definitely, certainly, I mean, that's the glory of the kind of third round draw every year, isn't it? You got another chance of having those sort of games. So hopefully next season, Reading can have a good old-fashioned away day in the FA Cup third round. But this year, sadly, it has fallen by the wayside, but hopefully not the year that we're going to be most rueing that fact. So let's hear from Veljko Pavanović and what he said after the Luton game, and then jump into the mailbag.
Proud of the group today, proud of the effort, great football in the second half. I think we maybe started the game a little bit shy until we generated the opportunities that lifted our confidence, and then I think from that moment we were a better team. I'm very happy with what I saw in the players that are not usually involved, especially from the youngsters. I think there are good players over there, and we got to keep pushing them up. So it would have been a great great fact for our confidence if we scored that goal or draw the game, and then had the opportunity to go in extra time and win the game. Unfortunately, as it didn't happen, now we gotta absorb this loss and recover and prepare for upcoming months.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Not too many questions this week then, Westy. SDS starting us off by asking what's happened about Thierry Neves. Is he our next highly rated prospect to not get a chance? Basically, Pavanović said before the game that Neves was injured for this game, so we couldn't really read too much into whether he was going to be involved or not involved, but certainly a player that, you know, I think probably, as Westy said, it's a bit of a shame that we're not really going to get loads of chances to see the young kids in the next few weeks, and Neves, you know, you sort of could probably add to that. Even when they have been on the bench in Championship games, Pavanović hasn't really turned to them. So I suppose we'll have to wait and see how the season unfolds and how January unfolds as to whether they're going to get any more chances. Speaking of which, Ben Thomas asking, of the players that played yesterday from the under-23 squad, who has the best chance of breaking through to the first team long-term, either in the latter part of this season or into the next? Now, Westy, when we did our awards for the Tyler Stending Christmas, I gave my sort of breakout tip to Dejan Tetek, because as a central midfielder, kind of defensive orientated, good on the ball, potentially someone that might be able to break in. I don't know which of the players you saw on the weekend that you think have a good chance.
Yeah, again, it's a little bit horses for courses. I think as a midfielder, if you're playing free in midfield, it gives a young player an opportunity to come on and play sort of 15, 20 minutes if the game's going well, doesn't it? Whereas defenders... you don't generally tend to risk young defenders, although we have a little bit this year, but they're sort of in early 20s rather than in a younger 16, 17, 18 type ages. So out of all of them, I think it might be Bristow. You know, it might be Bristow gets a game at left back, because I think that's a position where sometimes you can fill in with a youngster. Other than that, like I said, I think although they played well as a side, I don't see any of those players making it into that first team within the next maybe 18 months, if they do at all. And we've had good players in the past before that have gone away and made their names at other clubs and then come back up to this level, and it is very difficult. So I'd be surprised, if I'm honest with you, that any of them make it into the first team as regulars within the next 18 months, 2 years. I'd be shocked, actually.
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? Ideally, you'd be able to send like Melvin Lambert or Tetek out on loan now and see if they can have a go at League One, League Two. But we haven't got many academy players left, as I said earlier. So to put an under-23 team out, we kind of need those players to still be around. And, you know, it's easier said than done, just sending a player out on loan to like Wimbledon or whatever and saying, oh yeah, give him 10 games and he'll score 8 goals, because that's not necessarily how it works. So
I'm not trying to sound down on the young players, because it's a really good football. I just think that if you're a championship side, someone has to be exceptional, like your Elise Ace, to be able to push into that first team. And like I say, if you've got players like Elise and Estevez that are not guaranteed starters and they're in their teens, the players that I see play on Saturday are nowhere near that level. Do you know what I mean? They're not close enough to that level to say, actually, yeah, he'll be in the side in the next 18 months. Now, they might progress massively all of a sudden out of nowhere, which we've seen before, and one of them might prove me wrong. But if Estevez and Elise is the level, then the players that played on Saturday are nowhere near that level.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? The Reading are in a promotion battle, and we saw in 11, 12 players like Mikel Antonio. We've seen Simon Cox fall by the wayside in these kind of winning teams, because it's the hardest possible moment for a young player to get in, because every single game Reading play at the moment, they have to win or at the very least get a good draw. So, yeah. You know, and it may be the best chance that these young players are going to have is that Reading lose their next 10 games and that the season's over. So obviously we don't want that to happen. So
it's funny because we've had managers before that won't risk them when we're down the bottom because it's too risky, and they won't risk them when we're at the top because it's too risky. It seems like you would have to have a sort of really average season where you sit in the middle of the table with 10 games left, you ain't going nowhere, so you could give a few of them a game. But like I said, I think they probably need to go away and have a season somewhere else before they could get anywhere near that first team.
Yeah, Peter asking, why do we keep playing Sam Baldock in a role that he is neither suited to or any good at? Surely it's better to play one of the under-23s or a false nine. Well, I'm loath to criticise Sam Baldock because, I mean, as Peter says, playing him up front on his own isn't really his role. His best role is as a second man to a player, perhaps like Buskas, who is going to sit in the box and wait for good chances. You have Baldock running the channels and doing the dirty work, as it were. But I think at the end of the day, he's perhaps, if we sign a striker, he'll move on. But I suppose for now, I'm relatively comfortable with the idea of just kind of having him around as a decent-ish experienced player that can do a job. But so long as we don't expect that job to be scoring a hat-trick every game, then we can work around that.
Yeah, again, we've discussed Baldock at length, haven't we, over the last couple of seasons, and I say, and I stick with it, that he's what I call a buzzy B footballer. He buzzes around, but he doesn't really contribute a great deal because he's not super quick, he's not great in the air, he's not great on the ball. He's got a nice little flick here and there, but he's fourth choice, and we're all aware that he's fourth choice. Melvin Lambert, like I said, I thought he'd done well, but he should have scored when he had the opportunity. And I think Melvin Lambert could well take that fourth choice off him pretty readily, pretty soon. Baldock doesn't offer you a lot when he's up front on his own, but we all know this. And is that his fault that he's been made to play in that position? No, it's just because we haven't got the other players to do it. And I think as long as everyone's fit, then Baldock's nowhere near the side anyway. So it is what it is at the moment. We just have to deal with it. But like I said, he's a player that needs to really be moved out of the club, I would have said, at least by the back end of this season, because I don't see there's any place for him the way we play at the moment.
No, that's the thing. It's unlikely that someone's really going to make us an offer in January, but if they did, I'd imagine we'd take it. And, well, let's talk about some transfers now then. Let's go into News Bites and see what's been discussed in the gossip columns.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Still with some potential outgoings first and Westy. Sam Walker is supposedly on his way to being loaned to AFC Wimbledon. Third choice goalkeeper, fairly straightforward decision that is, with Southwood, as you say, doing quite well on the weekend. Michael Olise continues to be linked with various Premier League sides. Aston Villa are the latest. Still talk of release clause. I saw one mention that he would demand quite a high wage if he did move up to the Premier League this January. Westy, have you got any great sort of opinions on Lisa at the moment? Is there a sense that, you know, letting him go in January is the right idea, or do you want to just wait until the summer?
I don't know if we have a choice, do we? It's still a bit shady of what actually his contract does say. I think there's been conflicting reports. The fact that there's a lot of clubs coming in for him will suggest that they think they can get him at a decent price, and it's a no-risk signing for him at the age of 19 if they are getting him for $8 million with the potential that he has. It's a great deal for anyone, isn't it? I know Chelsea have got a good habit of buying young players cheap and loaning them out for 4 or 5 years and then selling them for more than they bought them for. So as a business move for these clubs, it's a great idea. For us, I think it's a real shame. I mean, we should be demanding a lot more money than $8 million for him. But as it stands, I don't think we can. But again, it's not been really cleared up. We're sad to lose him, but I think if the money is invested correctly, then we could improve the whole squad, because I know the potential's there for him to be a really good player. And again, he's had a lot of assists this year, and he's certainly improved. He's improving as the season goes on. He will get better and better. But I think if you're going to get rid of him and replace him with make it a stronger squad, then I think that could be beneficial to Reading. We've lost good players before. It's football, isn't it? Sigurdsson went, and you know what I mean. It's just if you get good young players, you sell them on. You hope that the squad improves because of it, rather than it's a massive loss to you.
Yeah, it's all about how you replace him if he does go in January. And I think a fee like £8 million, you can certainly use that money to keep the other players that may be going, such as Omar Richards, but you can certainly be using that money as well to be bringing in a player who is ready-made rather than a player with potential. And obviously that player might not be more, you know, ready-made, might not be as good as Elise when he's ready-made, but he can be better than Elise is now. So technically speaking, as long as that gets you over the line in promotion, then that, in fact, is almost a good deal in that sense.
Yeah, if that's what happens, again, we don't know what's going to happen. But if we lose him, it's a shame, but it's not the end of the world, I don't think. The only person I'd be upset if we lost is if we lost Lucas Jow, because I think that would decimate that squad, because I'd say they're 30% better when he plays, at least.
Yeah, well, another rumour at the moment is that Omar Richards, as we discussed last week, talking about Bayern Munich, that's not really changed as such. Obviously, loads of places are reporting on it now. Sky Sports News saying that it's FFP that's preventing Reading from making a good contract offer. Other reports, I mean, the Chronicle very helpfully one night said that he's staying, and then the next morning said he was going. So they've covered their bases. Football Insider have said that Cohen Bramall, the former Arsenal left back, who's playing at Colchester at the moment, is being eyed as a potential replacement. We've also seen The Sun saying about Elias Chair from QPR, interesting Reading, and a number of other promotion chasers. So really, in terms of incomings at the moment, Westy, it doesn't feel like there's any kind of concrete stuff going on. Paunovic has said that we're going to have to wait a bit in terms of incomings and see what kind of players become available later in the month. He's also said the club is doing everything to put something together to keep both Lisa and Richard. So I suppose that's kind of the thing with January, isn't it? You just have to kind of, that first 3 weeks, almost nothing happens apart from the obvious stuff, or, you know, injury coverings and such. But it's all of it happens in the last few days, doesn't it?
Yeah, it always does, doesn't it? I don't know, just don't make it a week rather than a month, because it just speeds all the deals up, because it saves people sort of not showing their hand too early, you know? With Richards, you just mentioned there, for me, if Reading are not allowed to put a decent contract together, I think that is an unfair rule, because they're going to lose a player that's probably worth, I mean, if you was to sell him at the moment, you'd be disappointed if you didn't get $9-10 million for him, based on the fact that he's come on leaps and bounds. If you can't put a decent contract together, then you're going to lose him for nothing. I don't see how that's fair, because you're going to have to replace him with somebody, aren't you? And that somebody could end up costing you £1 million anyway. So I don't get that. For him, if he gets the move to Bayern Munich, then who could blame him? It's just a shame that another one of our top young players is going to be leaving us, and we're not really going to see the benefit of that.
Yeah, no, it feels like a really weird one with Richards. It almost feels like the Loader situation last year, but then Loader wasn't in the team, so the kind of stakes were a little bit lower. But at the moment, I mean, if we keep Richards till the end of the season, he goes out on a pre-agreed contract to someone like Bayern Munich, then there's a sense that Reading, you know, no matter what contract they were going to offer him, wouldn't have made a difference. But I still find it a little bit far-fetched that Bayern Munich would want to sign him. The idea of him being an understudy to a player who's like 3 years younger than him anyway feels a bit weird to me. But just to round off the other news bites then, the women's team, they hosted Chelsea on the Sunday afternoon, lost 5-0, sadly, the only game to survive the COVID postponements of the WSL. Under-23s don't play till the 15th, under-18s till the 23rd. And I suppose that is it for news bites. So let's move on then to a big match preview and me talking about what Reading have up next.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So 3 p.m. on Saturday the 16th at the Mad Stad, it is Reading versus Brentford. A clash, well, one that we only had about 3 weeks ago, it felt. But this one's come back around then, Westy. 1 point above us with a game in hand. They've got a 9-goal advantage in terms of goal difference. And this one, I mean, they've only lost 3 league games all season. Reading have only won 1 of the last 7 meetings between these two teams. So I suppose taking a draw is something we'll be very happy to do.
Yeah, I think we can't afford to lose, can we? If we want to stay in touch with the top two, we really need to get some wins or at least pick up points in some of these top games. And I think Brentford is, you could count that as one of the top games, definitely one of the teams that are in the hunt for them top two places. So a defeat obviously would be not great for us pushing forward into trying to get in the Premier League. I think we're capable of beating them on our day. So we'll see what happens. I think it should be a good game.
Yeah, we should have Lewis Gibson back available for selection, although whether you even put him in or not. I mean, you've got, if you had Holmes at right back, McIntyre and Morrison with Richards presumably at left back, then I think that's pretty much it. I don't know if you'd even bring Lewis Gibson back if he is fit.
No, I don't think it's a start. That's for definite. It's certainly been on the bench, I'd have thought. But unfortunately for him, he just sort of got into the side and got himself injured, and Richards is back now. So you don't really see a place for him at the moment based on the form of Holmes and McIntyre at the minute.
Yeah, so I suppose it's a good problem to have for Reading. Obviously, Everton probably won't be too happy. I remember one Everton fan, a mate of mine, said that he's, you know, the next best thing when we signed him, and we've barely really seen him. And when we have played him, I think it's that Stoke game, he made a pretty poor error. So, you know, I suppose that Lewis Gibson, we can kind of bank him at the moment if Everton are happy for us to keep him. And we can, you know, maybe if we get an injury last 3 weeks of the season, he comes on and keeps 3 clean sheets, then it was worth it and he's the hero. So that's the sort of thing we might be looking at. Yakume Zen, Liam Moore probably won't be back for this one, looking towards the end of the month. So, yeah, really, I suppose Brentford, at the end of the day, they're a team that have held their nerve excellently, having lost the playoff final last year. And really, I mean, if we were to meet them in the playoff final, I wouldn't feel too confident. So in terms of predictions for this one, Westy, I'm leaning towards a 2-1 defeat as a kind of, you know, just kind of showing us, I don't quite think we're at that level for automatic promotion. Brentford probably are around that level at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they've sold a lot of players, made a lot of money, but invested it really well, haven't they? And they've got a big, big, strong squad now, and they're more than capable of getting into the Premier League. And they'll be hoping if they do, that they manage to stay there. So it is a real test for us. But I think on our day, I think we're as good, or if not better, than most of the teams in and around us. Obviously, we're a better side when Maite's in it, just because of his goal power and his power. So missing him is quite a big loss. But I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I think I'd certainly take that. And you look ahead to the games that Reading have coming up after it, and really it's not too bad a picture. There's Coventry at home on the Tuesday night after that. That's a 6 p.m. kickoff. Go to Preston, have Bournemouth at home, go to Stoke, have Millwall at home. You get into this period now without the FA Cup and stuff, you can really just concentrate on the Championship. And I think that certainly over the next few weeks, particularly like Coventry, Preston, Millwall, there's certainly enough that I can't imagine Reading falling by the wayside. We've got 4 points on 7th place at the moment, even though they have a game in hand. And really, Reading can just kind of keep, you know, bobbling along at the moment. And this is a time of the year that I think we've got a decent chance of just kind of keeping up, picking points.
Yeah, me too. I think, again, there's enough there to suggest that we're better than these sides. Not to say that they won't turn us over now and again, but in the course of the season, you'd have thought they'd have picked up more points than they'd lost. against anyone outside the top six, I'd have thought. Like I said, in every game, even games we've lost, we've looked more than capable of getting points out of it, or we should have got points out of it. So I think we are a top six side, and I think we'll remain that way till the end of the season. I don't see any reason to suggest, unless we have a real bad injury crisis, that we won't end up in them top six, in that top six.
Yeah, even the games we've lost 3-0, we haven't looked that bad, I suppose.
No, so, to be fair, like I said, I was on Radio Barch not so long ago, I said the same thing. I said the games we lost 3-0, at some points during them games, we could have either took the lead or bit back, and we just didn't. And that's Championship football for us. It's been like that for years, hasn't it? If you don't take your chances when they come, you tend to get bit. And we just have come the wrong end of either some poor decision-making in the games that we lost, which we're starting to sort of knock out of our game, which has certainly helped us pick up points over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, hopefully that is the sort of thing that Reading have learned to do. And if you got it out of the system early, then it's the best way of doing it, I think. So we will be back after that Brentford game on Saturday, as I say, 3 o'clock game on the iFollow on the 16th. And then we have Coventry on 6 o'clock on the Tuesday the 19th. We'll be back in between those two games to discuss what hopefully will be a Reading win in a very key contest. Thank you very much, Westy, for popping on this afternoon for a chat.
So it was a pleasure. It's my 13th year of podcasting, Mark. 13 years.
We're coming up towards not only the 250th episode of the Tireless End, but also TTE is turning 10 in this year. So
wow.
Think back of all those days back on the old WordPress blog and everything, and it's double figures soon.
Isn't it amazing how quickly it goes?
Certainly, and I'm very nearly at a point where I can discuss a successful season for Reading.
Yeah, you might well do this year, hopefully.
Yeah, there's always a chance, and hopefully we can continue that chance with a good victory on Saturday. Certainly will be a 6 pointer at the top of the table, the sort of clash that Reading fans have not been able to savour for too many years. But this year they are coming in abundance. And you know what? We've not been too bad in them so far. So let's hope for another 3 points for the Royals on Saturday. Thank you very much for listening, and come on, you Arse.